Hello, everybody. I'll be right with you. I'm just finishing up one thing here. This is the Affair Recovery Library call, as well as the EMSO call. So today we only have one question, and it's a great question. It's, how do you know if you have PTSD, and what do you do about it? You know, it's interesting, this past week I actually talked to two separate women, both out of state, interestingly enough, about post-traumatic stress disorder, because they're farther down the line. One of them is actually 20 years down the line, and actually 22 years down the line, and she had an event that triggered some flooding for her and has since spun out. And so post-traumatic stress disorder is basically a physiological condition created by severe trauma. And whenever we experience a traumatic situation, to avoid that sort of event again, our body is, or our brain is programmed to know how to respond. It goes into what we call fight or flight if it sees that situation once again. In theory, what is supposed to occur is if it, you know, once we see that memory, we're trained, or our body is programmed to react very quickly. For instance, if you walk by a snake and you see the snake, you'll move quickly within 1/200th of a second, which is a good thing. But then, in theory, the prefrontal cortex is supposed to begin analyzing what type of snake it is and decide whether or not you need to keep running, or if it's just a harmless snake. So our what we call amygdala, the reptilian part of our brain, hits what we call the sympathetic nervous system, which puts us into the fight or flight, and we begin to flood, and all we can do is go into self-protection. It's not about being relational. It's just about it's our mind's way of trying to keep us safe once it thinks that we're back in an incredibly dangerous situation. And so it's just responding in ways to keep us safe. Then the prefrontal cortex, when it analyzes things, hits what's called the parasympathetic nervous system and shuts everything down. The orbital frontal lobe in the prefrontal cortex actually runs behind our eyeballs, and it runs from that prefrontal cortex back to the amygdala. And it's the communication line that basically says, okay, this isn't the exact same situation. We're months down the road. We're 22 years down the road. And, you know, it's not the same. We're not in the same danger. However, when there is post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, what occurs is that it's like that communication line, or the brake line is cut, and so the prefrontal cortex is no longer able to hit the parasympathetic nervous system and shut the system down. It's like the emotions being created, or the fight or flight situation being created by the amygdala, now have control, and there's no way to shut the system down. It's a continual flood that is going full blast. I always, you know, liken it into a car going down a hill with the brake lines cut. It's interesting, people who have PTSD, all of it makes perfect sense to them in the moment. They can look back on it later and go, wow, why did I get focused on that again? Because nothing even happened. But what determines whether or not someone has post-traumatic stress disorder really has to do with how long that, or the intensity of those events, and how frequently they're happening from the point of initial discovery. So if it's normal for someone to be reactive for 3 to 6 months after a serious event, I mean, that is, obviously, you want some assurance that there's safety and that you don't have to be running every time you see something that looks similar or a reminder comes along. You begin to go, okay, it's just a reminder. It's just a thought. It's just something similar. It's not really the exact same thing. Someone with PTSD, though, at that six-month mark, what happens is it always looks like just the same thing. And so they get stuck with going back and continually re-experiencing the full intensity of that pain as things begin to spin out of control. The problem with the post-traumatic stress disorder gets to be it's you can't be rational and you cannot be relational when you go to the amygdala. The amygdala is not made for working things out. Its whole purpose in our life is to keep us safe. So especially as it relates to infidelity, the way it does that is it pushes people away. It doesn't help us reconnect with people. In fact, it would never try to reconnect with people because its whole thing is keeping me away so I won't be hurt again. So it's kind of infuriating, I think, at times for others kind of dealing with that, because even as they begin to make suggestions or they try to accommodate or help, it still feels to the other person not good enough because the amygdala just wants the safety or the space. So the second half of that is, what do you do about it? Now, what you have to do with all of that part is ultimately you somehow have to get that orbital frontal cortex reconnected. You have to find a way to make what we call a coherent story. The easiest way to create a coherent story, at least from my perspective, ultimately is doing something like EMDR. Well, maybe the first thing is accepting the fact that, okay, I can see that I'm not kind of on that bell curve, that somehow I am still flooding at a really intense level, more so than others. And in a sense, I don't know, it still controls me more than me controlling it. So once you can accept there's a problem, then the solutions to the problem begin to look a little different. So one of the great things is what I call EMDR, eye movement desensitization, and reprocessing. What that effectively does is using the eye movement that we experience in REM sleep, it allows for kind of a rational conversation within your head for processing that whole event and making it or finally getting it to make sense inside of you. With PTSD, people can try to explain it and try to get it to make sense. It still doesn't make sense because part of the block is inside of you because it's still emotional. It's not rational. What the EMDR does effectively is calms down that emotional flood so that you can rationally look at the situation and connect the dots within your own head, and you don't have to experience the full intensity of that pain. In fact, it even gets back to particular memories that may be exacerbating the situation unconsciously and keeping a person stuck. So to me, the first choice is EMDR. The second choice is some sort of group therapy, working with other people with PTSD. Because watching others flood, while in your own mind that reality seems, I mean, it's going to seem for the person with PTSD, it all makes sense. It's not something that seems strange. But when you're with other people with PTSD and they begin to share their experiences, there's an ability to relate to those people and you begin to see it differently. You can see it in them even when you have a blind spot and you're unable to see it within yourself. So exercises and kind of processing through with people who can really, really validate and connect with you is a critical component. I remember a session I had once upon a time where somebody shared some information that was incredibly traumatic to me, and it's like I couldn't even get my feet back on the ground. And it's called, and so I was experiencing what's called vicarious PTSD. It's like somebody else telling me a story. I was vicariously experiencing their PTSD from the story they shared. And so I had to go and process with somebody who had been through a similar situation, who understood. I remember the incredible validation I got from him, and knowing that he understood because he had been there, done that, was very helpful. And that's where I think a lot of times communities such as Harboring Hope can be very helpful. But again, finding a group of people who are safe to talk to, who have been through the same situation. That's part of what they do in the VA. They put soldiers together who have experienced common situations so that they're able to process and ultimately get to a place where they know that they're not crazy, but at the same time, the story becomes coherent and they're able to reconnect the dots in their head, and that helps them move forward. The problem with that particular approach is a lot of times it is a much slower approach to healing, and it's not a problem, but it just takes time, and sometimes it's not as thorough. It just depends on the person how long it takes to begin to connect those dots. One of the third treatment options for PTSD is medication, and one of the problems is the brain gets so kind of overheated once it starts to flood and the amygdala is firing that it chews up a lot of a person's neurochemicals. It's like there just gets to be a deficit, and once our serotonin levels drop below a certain level, it creates a sense of anxiety and obsessiveness. In fact, it can create what we call assurance OCD, where there's continually a checking and a questioning, because it's like the mind needs this ongoing reassurance that everything is going to be okay. And that is a chemical problem. Like I said, this is more physiological than psychological. And when you do things such as a serotonin reuptake inhibitor, along with potentially something like Abilify, those types of things, or Seroquel, they can be very helpful in slowing the mind down enough where someone can begin to rationally think, look at it, and connect those dots and get back together. A fourth technique that people use is cognitive behavioral therapy. Again, it's a matter of how quickly things get done. This one is a bit more difficult, because if the person's already struggling with controlling thought patterns, using a technique of learning to control thought patterns gets to be very difficult, and it takes an amazing amount of commitment to question yourself constantly and say, okay, you know, what is this? You know, this is just a thought. This isn't real. This isn't back here. I'm now in this moment. And to analyze that much, most people in a state of depression, or once those neurochemicals fall down, they have trouble with that, but that is certainly another technique that is used. So there's other techniques such as ISF, internal family systems. You're going to have more trouble probably finding people familiar with some of those techniques. There's also sometimes some inner prayer healing things that people use that can help. I mean, there's many techniques that people have used through the years. I'll say probably the most effective and the most efficient is still, though, the eye movement desensitization reprocessing. So I hope that answers people's questions about PTSD. I know that was probably a lot of information, and maybe more than what people really wanted, but it is a big topic. And, you know, for those of you who struggle with that, I know it's difficult. You're not crazy, but there really is hope and a chance to feel a lot better. And I hope you can have the means to get with people who can help you work through that. So that's all of our questions for the day. And I want to thank everybody for joining the call. And I hope everybody has a good week. I'll talk to you next Monday. To healing.